You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 2nd of December, we've got local GDP data due 11:30 this morning. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Jimmy Moyaha, we had Alex Forbes' results. The stock was slightly down. And then a high prop update. Not bad. I mean, they get the nice details of foot traffic and vehicles and the like, and certainly moving in the right direction. Melanie Munaleke from Absa CIB, they upgrade the local GDP forecasts and what the data tells us about US tariffs on SA, and then pressing investment management. Infrastructure is the flywheel of the economy, and a 15 billion rand infrastructure bond that can help that process. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Do Walmart-branded stores solve Massmart's game dilemma, deliberately leaning away from heavy promotional activity and loyalty cards in favor of everyday low prices? Business Day, factory output falls to lowest level in 5 years, but despite the downturn in activity, employment index rose for a second straight month. We saw employment index up in the PMI data as well. Morning markets, US is red, S&P down 0.5%, NASDAQ 0.4% lower. The East is mixed. We've got Sydney, just a few points down. Tokyo is up almost 0.5%. Hong Kong is up 0.1%, and Tencent down almost 0.5%. Commodities, all red. Gold futures, 4,255. Brent, 6,319. Platinum, 1,666. Palladium, 1,464. The Rand is 1,710. Bitcoin, 86,200. And top 40 opening call, 190 points to the green, little under 0.2% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Tony and I with Jimmy Moyaha. Jimmy, I always appreciate the early morning time. Alex Forbes, or Alexander Forbes, although their branding is Alex Forbes these days. Results for 6 months ending September. I mean, not a horror set of numbers, but a tough space. And I always wonder how in a zero GDP growth environment they managed to grow. I suppose it's efficiencies. It's stealing from competitors. But the market pushed it down. Your thoughts on the numbers?
Yeah, morning, Simon. I think a part of it is also having a billion rand in cash that you can spend on projects. It helps that you're able to leverage your balance sheet to acquire what you find valuable, what areas you might want to expand into. Being highly liquid and highly cash generative from an Alex Forbes perspective allows them that mobility to be able to move around in these difficult times. And you look at just how asset managers and financial services providers have been performing at this time. South African ones have always been undervalued globally, but they have strengthened their balance sheets. They've cleared off unnecessary debt. They've opened themselves up really to be able to take advantage of opportunities as they may present themselves. Now, Alex Forbes also commented on the fact that they're introducing a new operating model within the business that will allow them to have a greater shift in control between the parent, effectively between the board level and the four business units that sit within the business. So it'll be interesting to see how that operating model starts to shape up. But from a balance sheet perspective, I mean, they've assessed over the last couple of months, I'd imagine, or even years, that they have a strong enough balance sheet. If you look at the decision this time around from an interim dividend perspective to declare those interim dividend out of income reserves, clearly shows you their cash generative power and the fact that they still have enough on the balance sheet after paying out that dividend to still be able to take advantage of opportunities. So very good from their perspective on how their first 6 months have kicked off.
Yeah, I mean, capital cover ratio, they need, well, they target 1.2 times. They are at 2.1 times, hence the billion rand sitting somewhere in their head office. Hyprop, this is a pre-close operational update, so it's not results or anything. Just gives us a sense of how things are doing. They, of course, are selling 50% of Hyde Park and will ultimately sell the other 50% because of the call put arrangement. But, I mean, not a bad set of numbers. And I like the breakdown. They tell us turnover. They give us a trading density, foot count, vehicle count, and most of these numbers, 24 versus 25 are moving in the right direction.
Absolutely. And if you look at just the property space in general, I mean, if you look at the likes of GrowthPoint, a much bigger real estate investment trust, and you look at Accelerate that put out numbers yesterday was Accelerate alongside HighProp, not GrowthPoint. But if you look across the real estate investment trust space, you're seeing portfolio optimization being a common theme, regardless of the size of the REIT. The HighProp decision to get rid of the Hyde Park business, we know that started around mid this year, around July of this year. So we have been in the know about this decision. Interesting decision regardless, but they've still got other great assets within their business, the likes of Rosebank, the likes of Canal Walk in the Western Cape, the likes of Clearwater that saw the first Walmart, and they gave us some idea of how much foot traffic that Walmart saw as well. So from a property portfolio perspective, they're still quite well set up property-wise. Interesting that they still have quite the presence in Eastern Europe. I mean, they're in Bulgaria, they're in North Macedonia as well, so they've got quite the presence outside of their core focus areas, and they've now made it very clear that their core focus areas remain the Western Cape and optimizing the Gauteng portfolio. So perhaps they're not happy with how the Gauteng portfolio has been performing to a certain degree, and that's why cleaning up some of it makes sense. Or you're able to lighten the portfolio, still maintain strength and presence, and use the 1.6 billion you're going to get from the HighProp deal to pay down debt, which is their plan from the Hyde Park sale. But I think just the themes that we're seeing from the property space in general reinforce the fact that property companies, particularly REITs, are looking to make sure that they have optimized portfolios that are performing, and they're not afraid to let go of non-core or non-performing assets.
Yeah, that absolutely. I take your point on that. And certainly, it was a good update. And the high, as you say, a hard park, 800 million, and then a bunch more coming, another 800 million in time. It gets rid of a chunk of their debt. We'll leave it there. Jimmy Moyoha, always appreciate the early morning. Our poll today is around that HighProp trading update. Do local malls seem busier to you? And we're not talking Friday. That was Black Friday. Things were crazy. But generally, do malls look busier? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Melanie Muleleka, senior economist at Absa CIB, the South Africa Q4 2025 quarterly perspectives. Melanie, always appreciate the time and thoughts. The big one, perhaps, actually a lot of big data in there, but the one that jumped out for me, you've upgraded your expected GDP for South Africa, both for what's left of 2025, but also into 2026. Things edging in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think we should be clear. Growth is still weak. It's still not where we want to see. This is not the kind of growth that is going to make a huge difference to the unemployment situation in this country. But we are seeing a gradual improvement. Look at the last couple of years, Simon. Growth on average is about 0.5%. Mm. And what we're expecting for this year is 1.3%. So some improvement. And I suppose the question could be, where is this growth coming from? And I think there's a number of things that we have seen this year. One is just that the consumer is really looking stronger this year compared to the last couple of years. This low inflation environment is clearly helping real incomes. The fact that the SARB has also come through to deliver some rate cuts, I think, has definitely also helped. So I think that side has helped quite a bit. The other thing is the external environment. I think one of the things we've spoken about a lot is all of these big policy shifts, particularly as it relates to trade. But I think the resilience that you have seen in global economic activity, the fact that we have also had a South Africa terms of trade movement, the commodity price moves that have actually been favorable, I think has actually ended up meaning that the external environment has also been a bit of a tailwind for us, and you know, not as much of a headwind as we all feared earlier in the year. And all of those factors really helping to deliver this 1.3% growth that we're expecting for this year, Simon.
Yeah, and I think key point, I mean, it's not enough to solve our unemployment, but better than what we have seen. You mentioned the trade issues. I mean, the tariffs out of the US, and they've been all over the place over the course of the year. But you say the value of exports to the US down, and I don't want to say only, but down 9% year on year, April to September. But there are nuances in that. Precious metal is part of that, I imagine.
Yeah, it's a really important point to just remember that the tariff that we're facing out of the U.S. does not apply to precious metals and stones. And what you're actually seeing in that space, if we just compare that same period again, Simon, April to September, you see that precious stones and metals exports to the U.S. are actually up about 21%. Mm-hmm. Of course, a big part of that, I think, really just coming from the fact that your platinum prices are high, palladium prices are high, and of course the gold price also a lot higher. So that one area that isn't facing restrictions doing quite well. But when you look at other parts, you know, such as vehicles, of course, another really key export to the U.S., you know, that's really performed quite poorly. We're down about 52% in value terms over that period. You look at other parts of manufacturing, there are also some clear signs of pressure there. But what I also wanted to highlight, Simon, here is that although if you look at exports to the U.S., we are down, as you would expect, you know, across a lot of categories. Mm-hmm. When you look at total exports from SA, even for something like vehicles, we're actually still up. So I think the fact that the global economy has been as resilient as it had been has certainly been helpful to a lot of different parts of the economy. And let me use autos again as an example here. It's true that when you look at exports to the U.S., we are down. But you look at actual volumes, total exports out of SA, we're actually up a little bit. So the strength of the overall global economy really coming through to help or offset some of the losses that we're seeing in terms of exports to the US right now.
My sense is very much. And I mean, one of the other points you talk around National Treasury's 25-26 revenue targets, maybe a little conservative because of the precious metals we've been talking about. Very much a, if we look at the inflation, you've pulled that down to peaking at 4% in December. Moving in the right direction, slow steps, small steps, baby steps, but good steps in the right direction, which is something perhaps we haven't had to trumpet about for some time.
No, absolutely. Look, I think, you know, your point about public finances in particular, we've been in a very long period where our debt to GDP ratio has been climbing quite consistently. But we're actually now at a point where even with national treasuries relatively conservative in our view, numbers in the M2BPS, we're still seeing debt to GDP stabilizing in the current fiscal year and then slowly starting to come down. And which is why, of course, we've seen S&P coming out to say, you know what, this is a credible fiscal reform story. Mm-hmm. It's a credible story around structural reform as well. Growth is slowly starting to improve, which is why we've earned that one notch upgrade. It'll be very interesting to see, Simon, just what Moody's has to say about our rating a little bit later this week. Mm-hmm. And again, on your point about inflation, of course, one of the big things we've had this year is the inflation target reform. There was a lot of concern from different people saying, oh, a low inflation target is actually going to mean, you know, rates that should be higher than they otherwise should be. And that's not what we're seeing. I think the one really important thing is that this target reform, this shift to a low inflation target, is happening in a space where inflation is already not too far from 3%. And that should hopefully help expectations to adjust a little bit faster. And most importantly, you know, given the fact that inflation has been contained, the SARB has seen space to provide a little bit more accommodation as far as rates are concerned. And our view is that we should see more rate cuts into next year.
Yeah, and that then feeds into, again, a consumer, which, as you said in the report, is resilient. Yeah. It's tough out there, but we're doing okay. We'll leave it there, Miolani Moleleke, Senior Economist, Absa CIB. Always appreciate the insights.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Conway Williams, Head of Credit at Prescient Investment Management. Conway, appreciate the early morning. A medium-term budget policy statement of a couple of weeks ago really was, again, positioning infrastructure as an important part of getting our economy growing, getting that GDP, and ultimately getting our unemployment down. My sense is, I mean, the government has said this before, it just we're in perhaps a better position in terms of the ability of government to perhaps deliver on it. And we have seen some green shoots at Transnet. This time we could really get something working.
Hi, good morning, everyone. And thanks for having me on this morning.
And if we look at the comments from the minister, a 15 billion infrastructure bond. Talk to me about the infrastructure bond. This is a new sort of, as I understand, ring fenced bond that will work within the treasury, but it'll only be exclusively for infrastructure.
So, Simon, I think just to answer your previous question, this is not the first time that the bond has been talked about. So in the 2024 MTVPS, there were various reforms that were being mooted just to talk about boosting infrastructure and investment in infrastructure in South Africa. But now it's actually gone from rhetoric to actual formal announcement and market announcement. So the bond will be issued this week.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, it is to actually support infrastructure in South Africa. It's up to 15 billion. It has a specific use of proceeds and a structure and tranches and auction mechanism that is now known and it has been announced. So it is a very forward step for our government in terms of what we've generally been talking about for the last decade in terms of how we're going to move from just rhetoric to actual action. And then over and above that, they're also going to be looking at this new guarantee mechanism. It's going to also sort of stimulate and crowd in the private sector. So it's a move from just knowing that the fiscus can't afford to actually finance the entire infrastructure ecosystem. They need to actually do innovative type or implement innovative type measures to actually crowd in the private sector and then actually execute on it. So we're quite excited that this infrastructure, as the president and the minister mentioned, it's the flywheel of the economy, and it's actually now being put in place. And because we've always heard lots and lots of talk, what we're going to do, how important infrastructure is for South Africa, but now mechanisms are actually being put in place.
Yeah, the rubber hits the road, as they say. So it's a 15 billion infrastructure bond. It's 2 billion credit guarantee vehicle. The plan here is to de-risk a private investment. How does that work? Is that essentially government promising a return? What's the process with the credit guarantee vehicle?
So I think we don't have the specifics of the credit guarantee vehicle like we do with a bond.
Mm-hmm.
But what we understand is it will be an incorporated company where government will put in 2 billion rand. It will then get further financing from DFIs.
Mm-hmm.
And that would then go through the usual process where any sort of project can apply for this credit guarantee mechanism, which has been used internationally, India, Brazil, the US, across Africa as well. The actual guarantee structure will do a due diligence on a project.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have senior funders or bankers or asset managers now investing in a project and there is a specific event, a insured type event,
mm-hmm.
then you can claim against it. For example, non-payment or anything that is actually insurable. And then that structure then allows government to off-balance sheet risk.
Gotcha.
So not actually issue national treasury guarantees like they did in the past, but actually have this vehicle insuring. So for all intents and purposes, it is an insurance mechanism. But it's actually going to be up to 10 billion rand, that's our understanding. And then the key success factors of it is that it's going to actually show what the insurable events actually are.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. Okay, that's like, I mean, have they given us some sense of where they're looking particularly to focus with the infrastructure bond? Or at this point, is it almost, you know, we need tons of it. I mean, we need roads, we need hospitals, we need schools, we need Transnet. Has Treasury or government given us a sense of their sort of focus areas in infrastructure?
So we did see that the initial focus would be the de-risking of private investment in electricity and specifically electricity transmission infrastructure.
Mm.
But we do understand that it is going to expand into logistics and water. Water is the next energy crisis in the country.
Yeah.
So we need to have a de-risking within that space, have projects that we do know can actually contribute to our water safety and security as well.
Yeah, okay.
Well, so I think those are the focuses, yeah.
Yeah, and I take your point. Water, you know, we've sold Eskom. Water's the next challenge, and water is certainly for people, water is perhaps the bigger issue. We'll leave it there. Conway Williams, Head of Credit, Prescient Investment Management. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. I was chatting with Bianca Bortis yesterday. She, of course, director at Citadel. We're talking about the rand over the next couple of months into Q1 of next year. She said 16.50 is possible against the dollar. We asked if you thought that sounded reasonable. Around 40% each said absolutely. The other 40 said hard to call the rand. Fair shout on that. The rest said no chance at all. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Erixi results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.